kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. This is the final show of the year, another reviews episode. And we thought she was getting away, but no, Cole, you're here.
I'm like the cat that came back. I just never get to go away. Like, I'm always back.
But you're here for a reason.
The very next week.
But you are here for a reason. So
I am. A reason I wasn't supposed to be here for.
Yeah, last minute game came in. You stepped up. You took it. We'll get to that in a bit. But how was your Christmas?
My Christmas was fantastic. The kids had a good time. My in-laws weren't the complete worst. And it went well. I spent most of it slaughtering Christmas noobs on Call of Duty. And pretty content with the turn of events.
Get a lot of kills.
Yeah. There's a new character on Call of Duty, and all you got to do is win one game and you unlock her.
Mm.
And she's free. And she's supposed to be like a support character, and you're not supposed to get a lot of kills when you play with support characters like that. I assume you just heard my cat make a racket. But I can, and I do. And I've kind of discovered how to, like, fuck over the system. You should really only get your ultimate, like, once a game. And her ultimate is to hack everybody. Oh, you guys got a UAV? Mine now. You got a chopper in the air? Mine now. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Everything on the field just becomes yours. If you run an equipment charge so that you get your shit back faster and you can rack up enough kills, you can play like I was last night where I was getting her ability four times a game.
Oh, my Lord.
They could keep nothing on the field, and it was so good, and people were so pissed. And Stu and I were getting hate mail, and people were like sending them messages calling us trash and stuff. Oh, it was so good.
Oh my God. How many people did you end up reporting last night?
I didn't report anybody. Rocket League has been my main report source lately. Like, I sign into Rocket League and I get like five or six pop-ups. An account you reported has been handled. Because after they introduced the clubs feature, racism, sexism, and bullshit shines. Because you can set a club name, and there's a lot of very bad ones. And so you can just report the shit out of those motherfuckers.
Good, fuck them.
Yeah, and we've seen some really bad ones. Like, sometimes I wonder how it gets past the filters.
Now I'm curious, but I don't want to get in trouble with the show.
Yeah, no. Like, I just sit there and I stare at it and I go, how did you get that? Now, look, Sick a Duck is funny, and I will let that one fly. But some of them, you're just like,
you're a bad person.
Yeah, and you're a grown-ass man. Because I'll go look at profiles. I'll report that shit, too. Oh, you got something in there you shouldn't? Not anymore.
Oh, boy.
And I've had to report some interesting shit. Actually, I've got a funny story, because I reported somebody on Rocket League for saying some really awful shit in chat, and I took a screenshot of it, and I posted it on Twitter, and I was like, this is the shit I deal with when I play games, and I said, people try to tell me that, you know, it's all in my head, or that it's just all in fun and games and stuff. But some of this stuff is shitty and damaging and just should never leave anybody's mouth.
Let alone there's bad people out there.
Yeah, let alone be typed across the screen. And the interesting thing was, I posted it on Twitter and somebody messaged me and said, holy shit, I know those guys in real life.
Oh, wow.
And I went and I looked at the guys I'd reported friends list, and sure enough, there was the person on their friends list. He actually knew them in real life. And he said he was going to say something to them about it. So,
wow. You know,
it's, there's real people on the receiving end, but there's real people on the giving end too. And you have to think, if you have the opportunity to say something to maybe change their behavior just a little bit, you should.
Yeah.
Make the world a little bit better of a place. Don't be a dick on Rocket League.
That's good life advice in general. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's funny because, like, you know, an aspect of gaming like that, there's humor in the trash talk, and I find a lot of it to be funny. There was one guy who, gosh, it's been like a year ago. Like, every time we scored in the chat, he'd be like, bruh, OMG, why though? Right?
Oh, God.
And if you see screenshots where a student and I are having really good games, you might see us saying that in chat again, just because it was so funny that the guy got worked up every time. Like, and now it sticks with us so that whenever we score, we're like, bruh, OMG, why though? You know, and it's just, it's funny. And there's that kind of humor. Even last night with people like Citizen, oh, you're trash or whatever in Call of Duty. It's funny. But when you start, saying cruel shit, that's a horse of a different color.
Yeah. You're trash because you're beating me. Then what's that make you?
Yeah. I've said that before. Boy, that doesn't say anything good about you, does it? You know, that shit's funny. That's just hate mail. We've been getting that shit since we played Halo Wars back on the 360. I mean, there were people who would just literally spam us with shit on Halo Wars when we'd win. So, that's a thing, and you can find humor in that. But like the guy who was in the chat, and he's like, oh, are you guys a couple? Oh, no. Oh, you're friend zoned, huh? Well, I'll let you win to impress her. Yeah, fuck you, buddy. I'm the motherfucking MVP on this team. Sorry, Studo. You know, that's the kind of shit where you're just like, nah.
Oh, God.
We gotta shut this shit down.
Well, it sounds like you had a fun Christmas.
Yeah.
You'll
that
never...
doesn't even include all of the shit my kids unwrapped and...
Like what? What did Santa bring?
Number one, last week, as a matter of fact, was roughhousing with a friend of hers during a sleepover, and she had her cell phone in her back pocket, and she sat on it and crushed it, and it wouldn't come on anymore. To be fair, though, her cell phone was already, like, dead. Like, the whole lower half of the screen had stopped working months ago.
Oh, God.
She'd asked a friend of hers at school to hold it, and she dropped it. And it hadn't worked all that time. So she got a new phone. Not anything, like, exciting or anything. It was a Samsung J7 on Boost Mobile, because that's all that really works around here. So, but she's excited. She was very happy with it. She got a new phone. Number three had asked for nothing more than a dinosaur that walked and roared. So okay. That is what she got. She got, she actually got two. She got the little For Real Friends animatronic dinosaur. And the funny thing is, like, she had all of her dinosaurs lined up on my desk last night. And I'm sitting here, like, trying to work and you know, and working on some paintings and sketches and stuff. And she's just setting up the whole other end of my desk as a dinosaur sanctuary. And the little For Real Friends dinosaur, it came with, like, a cookie and broccoli. And if you put the broccoli in its mouth, it goes, nom, nom, bah, and acts like you gave it poison. And if you put the cookie in its mouth, it, like, rocks back and throws its head back and nom, 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 nom. Yeah, it's happy. And so, like, she sat there, she looked at me, she put her finger in my face, and she goes, Mommy, she said, I need you to watch my dinosaurs. I'm like, okay. She's like, whatever you do, don't let them have cookies till they finish all their broccoli. And I'm like, I don't think you have to worry about me touching any of that.
Oh, God.
But she made damn sure that little shit was going to eat his broccoli. Number two got a new bike, and that was her biggest excitement, I think. That and what else was it that she was going over that she got? Art supplies. She's my little like secret artist, but she doubts herself about it, so she'll like she draws and then she hides it.
Oh boy.
And she says it's not very good. So we just decided to foster that this year, and we got her some nicer markers and stuff so she could quit using mine.
Oh, that's good.
They made a whole set of my markers go dry. So.
Oh, God. Stop using mommy shit.
Yeah, mommy shit is far more expensive than the shit that we get you. Please stop. So, but yeah, they all had a good one. She's enjoying the bike. We're going to have to work on her riding skills, though, because this is a mountain bike, and the one she had last year was not. And last year we were able to put training wheels on it, and anybody that knows my kids' ages knows that that's probably a little weird to hear her say, given that number two is almost 12. But she has balance problems because of she's autistic, and she has some motor skill delays. And so we have to actually like push the envelope this year and get her to shed the training wheels, because you can't put a training wheels on a mountain bike because of the gear shift.
Yeah.
So this is the year. We're going to do it.
I believe in you.
We have fingers crossed that we will be able to finally get rid of the training wheels. Otherwise, we're just going to have to keep the other bike and let her ride that one.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah, hope for next year. But I thought what was awesome was number one, she got a new bike as well. And I didn't mention this on the show, but they were suggested for Shop with a Cop, and that's how they got a lot of this stuff. They got to go for that. So they all three got new bikes. They all three got some new clothes and shoes, and then they had a budget that they could go shop with. And number one had got a bike last year for Christmas, and it was still in really good shape. So when she went for a Shop with a Cop and she got to pick out another bike, which we were not expecting, she actually came home and she called her grandmother and she asked if there were any children through the church who didn't have bikes.
Aww.
And she could donate her bike to.
That's nice. So
we found a family and the bike got a good new home for Christmas.
Nice.
Yeah.
My Christmas was pretty good.
Yeah. Did you get like catnip, and did Predator get probiotics?
Predator always has probiotic.
Yes.
So she doesn't need to worry about that.
We have to take care of Predator.
My mom bought me 14 bottles of Crystal Pepsi.
I saw this on Facebook.
I was so excited because it was like back for the summer only. Mm-hmm. And it started selling out everywhere, and we found a Dollar General that had it. And I was like, ooh, they have Crystal Pepsi here. I'm going to have to come back and get some. The next time we went back, they were all gone. I'm like, who the fuck bought all this Crystal Pepsi? Well, I figured out who the fuck bought all the Crystal Pepsi.
That's fantastic, though.
And they're all individually wrapped. So I'm leaving them wrapped, and I figure it's Christmas all year long while I go through all these bottles of Pepsi.
That's incredible. I'm a little jelly. I didn't get anything like that. I can't complain. I got my new computer earlier in the month. So,
but yeah, you got a computer. I would rank a computer a little bit above some Pepsi.
I don't know. One of my best memories of Christmas is when I was in college and my friends bought me a 12-pack of Dr. Pepper. And I just remember it was wrapped up in everything, and I was so tickled by it that I was like, that's dedication to a cause. Because we went to a college where you couldn't have a car unless you lived more than 400 miles away.
Oh, wow.
And so in our circle of friends, only one girl had the car. And so she was like our Walmart ride. And in order to go to Walmart in the next town over and get Dr. Pepper, they would have had to like coordinate the shit out of that. And I was so tickled. I was like, that was so thoughtful to go all the way and get me pop, because otherwise I was stuck until I came home. I couldn't get pop. I would like get 3 or 4 cases of pops to take back with me, but I didn't come home for Christmas that year because my family sucked. So I stayed at school, even in like the absence of Dr. Pepper. So it was a big deal. Do not underestimate the meaning that a can of pop can have on somebody at Christmas time.
Or a bottle.
Or a bottle.
Or yes. 14 bottles. Oh man, so Christmas was good for everyone. We should probably dive into these reviews because there are a lot to take care of on this episode. You've got one to talk about. You ready for this?
I do. Let's go.
Awesome. So first game to talk about tonight is called Sundered Eldritch Sundered Eldritch Edition words. Developed and published by Thunder Lotus Games, released December 21st on Xbox One and Switch for $19.99. Sundered is a chaotic, hand-drawn Metroidvania where you resist or embrace ancient Eldritch powers, confront hordes of terrifying enemies in an ever-changing world inspired by the works of H.P. Lovecraft. Sundered is a challenging and unique take on a classic genre from the creators of Jotun. So tell us, Cole, what is Sundered Eldritch Edition?
Sundered is basically like if Dead Cells wasn't pixelated. Does that make sense? Like, that's a really good, the first moments I'm playing it, if you remember when Dead Cells came out, I said a couple times, oh, I skipped on Dead Cells because I thought it was going to be hard on my arthritis. Mm-hmm. But Sundered is not quite as like demanding movement wise, so it has definitely been a manageable game. It also has an easy mode, which I am not mad at. But it is very much the 2D Metroidvania roguelite procedurally generated platformer. That's a lot of words. I feel like I just opened my mouth and they all fell out. But I have to admit, I haven't experienced the roguelite element of it. Because
good, I'm not the only one who can't talk today.
It's too much ham. I've turned into a mashed potato. But I haven't experienced the roguelite element of it because I was playing on easy and I can get ambushed by absolute hordes of enemies and I don't think I've taken more than 2 hits. I dare say that maybe easy mode was a little too easy. However,
well, step up the difficulty because some of the harder difficulties, holy shit.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I'm not brave enough to do this. Like, I just want to see as much of the game as I can and enjoy it. And so I was the first few times I was playing, like maybe first half hour or so, I was like, this is easy. This is fine. And then later I started to be attacked by more hordes and I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. The interesting thing about the hordes is that there aren't any scripted battles beyond the bosses and the mini bosses. So anything can happen and attack at any time, just randomly. It leaves you with a sense of always being on your guard. But I did find that, and again, I was playing on easy mode to start with, but like there was a lot of times where I was like, oh, there is absolutely nothing happening. And so I kept going back to try to trigger different events until I realized that, no, this is just a thing that happens randomly whenever it damn well pleases. Yeah. Which, for the most part, is fine. Like I said, you do have those moments where there are some lulls in the gameplay and you're just kind of exploring without any fear of anything. And then there are moments where you just get absolutely ambushed and you're like, help! Save me!
Yeah, I've had a few of those moments.
Have you met the giant laser turret things? Those things will hurt your feels.
Don't they have like shark heads?
Yeah.
Those sons of bitches. And they shoot you through like the entire stage.
Yeah.
You gotta run halfway back to fight them.
The line shows you where they're gonna shoot and you can get away from it a little bit. But when there's a whole lot of them, you're just like cowering in the corner, hoping the lines and they shoot you through everything. They give no fucks. Walls be damned. Those lasers are going to set you on fire.
Yep.
One interesting thing, which is more prominent if you're gonna die a lot. As you explore, you'll collect shards, and you can use these shards to upgrade. The skill tree in this game is just fucking huge. There is so much. You will use the shards. You can go back to the sanctuary. You don't have to die to go back to the sanctuary. You can run all the way back there, or you can take a shortcut and just like press the start menu and click return to sanctuary. Yep. Hallelujah for that. Because you can be pretty far out into the world and just be like, I have 50,000 shards and I would like to do something with these. Because upgrading your character makes running through the game far easier. Like, you can improve your health, improve your shield. You can pick additional perks. The perks are not cut and dry perks, though. Like, they come with balancers, if you will, where you may have enemies who's, you know, you can attack them through their shields and not be impacted by their armor, but your shield comes back slower, for example.
Yeah. Or one that boosts your attack based on, you know, successful attacks, but your armor goes down.
Yeah. So you really have to consider, is this a trade-off that I'm interested in even making? And just really balance it out based on how you play. There are tons of them, though. And then you collect them. You can either find them just like in the world as you're exploring. And I want to point out, exploration is king in this game. The combat, you know, it's there. It's a thing and it's fine. You press X, sometimes you press Y. But it's the exploration that really shines. And you are always rewarded, like, for just taking the road less traveled. My biggest gripe, though, is that for all the glory of exploring and just finding random things, it's easy to get sidetracked from your actual objective and have no fucking clue where you were supposed to go. And then you feel like you've gone forever with no progress. And
yeah,
so that's
been there.
My biggest complaint. Like,
I reach a bunch of dead ends.
Yeah, a marker of go here, please, would be good. Just so you know, some kind of general direction that you should be traveling for if you want to progress. Because you do, like you said, you just reach dead ends where, because it's Metroidvania, you don't have all the skills to progress that area. So you can't go anywhere. You have to backtrack. That was where I found Return to Sanctuary to be the most useful, though, because you could just go back to the start and you could then see on the map, okay, I went through this way last time. Now I can go left, you know, or go down.
Yeah.
And it would help as far as like getting back to being on track if I had gone crazy out of the way. My biggest complaint with the game is that it does get a little framey at times. I don't know if you experience this. This could just be where I'm on an S and my functionality isn't as high as like people on an X would be. But you can just like, when you press down and A to go down through a platform to go down. If you hold it, you can fall through several platforms until you stop. And whenever I would try to do that, the game would get a little framey and would stutter pretty bad.
I didn't really go too far when I would do that because I liked making sure that there was nothing that I was passing.
Yeah. See, I was doing it like, okay, I've already been through this area, but I went left or right and I want to go the other way now. And so then I would just like hold to drop to get back to where I was so I could go the other path. And it would just stutter and looked horribly framey for a few seconds until I stopped holding down on the buttons and let it kind of catch up. There were also a few instances where it would get a little framey during really hectic battles. If there was a lot going on screen, then it would kind of stutter a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't really run into anything like that, so I don't know if that's an X thing or if it's just your system being funky or who knows.
So my best guess would be maybe it could use a little bit of performance patching on the S. The S is just not quite up to snuff for it. I'm going to throw that out as a possibility. Because sometimes that shit just happens. Like, there are games that perform nominally better on an X than on the S. And I would assume if a dev is getting a dev kit, it's probably an X. So it's just sometimes needs a little more smoothing out or whatever for us peasants who don't have the fancy. Other than that, though, I had a great time. I appreciate that it was far more playable, especially with an easy mode so that I could actually explore and not feel like I was being brutally punished.
Yeah.
I mean, I made it a good chunk of the way through the game, and I've never died. I've got close, but I've always had... That's the other thing with being on easy is because there's an abundance of pickups. So, you know, there's plenty of shards. There's plenty of health elixirs that you can heal up with. I think I've used maybe two in my playtime just because I just didn't need them. I was doing well enough on my own. Of course, I'm also one of those players that, like, throws all of my points into damage as fast as I can.
No, so you just keep, offense is the best defense?
Yeah, as soon as I see something, I'm like, whack, 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 and carry on. Bye. You know, they don't even have a chance to hit me. So it's been an effective method for that. I didn't have to really worry about it. But I had a lot of fun. And like I said, beyond just a little bit of framiness and easily getting lost, like some kind of objective marker would be good.
It could use a manual save as well.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
It'd be nice to not have to rely on an auto save and hope that it saved somewhere. And then you find out, oops, it didn't.
Yeah.
There goes an hour of my life. But overall, $20. What do you think?
I give it a buy it. I think especially if you were a fan of Dead Cells or something in that, you know, Celeste and those kind of platformers with a lot of action stuff, you're going to have a blast.
I agree. I like the fact that it's more structured than Dead Cells is. I think I actually prefer it over Dead Cells.
Yeah.
Just because it's, you know, once you go through an area, that's the area. It's not going to be shuffled up next time you go through, and it's not going to be completely randomized next time you go through.
Yeah. It does have the procedural generation, but I think that's, again, I think it's one of the higher difficulty things that if you play on like super hard as opposed to super easy. Yes,
it's a mix of hand design levels and procedural generation. So you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's like if you imagine it like a jigsaw and like the pieces that fit, there's maybe three or four different potential pieces that can fit into the map.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's, and then doesn't reset unless you die. So again, I didn't experience that because I was doing fine and didn't die. Show off, humble brag.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Well, Cole, it was good having you back on for another episode before our break. I hope you have a happy new year.
I hope you have a happy new year, too. Next time I talk to you, you'll be back from MacFest.
Yep. It's going to be a couple of weeks, so.
Yeah.
Do you have any final words before you take off for real?
No, I'll see you next week.
All right, moving on. CJ Greenwood's here. CJ, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty, dig two.
Day two?
Dig two.
Oh, dig two. Okay.
If you don't know what that means, look it up.
We didn't even get to the game yet. I'm just asking how you're doing. Shit.
No, I'm transferring jobs, so I don't have any time. Because right now I'm working kind of both.
Oh, nice.
It's really awful and annoying, and I'm just debating not showing up to my job I hate anyway, and I'm leaving tomorrow.
Well, then fuck them.
That's what I'm saying. They got mad at me because I'm leaving. So I'm like, all right. I could have just not showed up.
Even more.
Exactly. It's like, I could have just not showed up. At least I gave some notice.
Yeah, seriously. Fuck them.
People be like that, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, I hear you. Anyway, you ready to talk about a game?
Is it Fortnite?
No, unfortunately. Although I did play that yesterday, so.
Why?
Because Chris wanted to play.
I saw you on Fortnite, but I looked at it once and I didn't like really look into it. And I was like, did I just see he was playing Fortnite? And then I was like, nah, it's not Joe. He couldn't.
It was the Save the World stuff. It wasn't the Battle Royale.
Okay, never mind. You're fine then.
Yeah. I don't like Battle Royale. So.
No. It's like two different sicknesses. You played Save the World, which is like just, you know, a minor ear infection versus the cancer that is Battle Royale.
I don't know how to segue to the game now.
Speaking of minor ear infections.
Speaking of dicks, next game to talk about is called SteamWorld Dig 2, developed and published by Image Inform Games, released November 21st on Xbox One for $19.99. SteamWorld Dig 2 takes you on a platform mining adventure forged in Metroidvania flames. When an old trading town is struck by mysterious earthquakes, it's up to a lone Steambot and her unlikely companion to uncover what trembling terrors lie beneath. CJ, tell us about it.
I just thought of the perfect segue for what we were just at, so you can cut this back in.
Okay.
You're not going to do that.
Not at all.
Speaking of games that aren't cancer.
Perfect.
I'll leave 3 seconds for editing.
1, 2, 3, and we're good.
Pretend that was in there first.
All right, anyway, all right. SteamWorld Dig 2.
SteamWorld Dig 2, the sequel to the game I never played. Which is true. This is my first experience with SteamWorld, even though I do own Dig and the unfortunate Heist that never showed up on Xbox One. Please bring it.
Yeah, seriously, I love Heist. I want it on Xbox so bad.
I imagine Heist is very different from this one, just because yes. I assume based on the fact that they didn't continue the series with that one. SteamWorld Dig 2 picks up right where the first one left off, storyline-wise, it seems. I wouldn't know, I didn't play the first one, so this one's just majorly spoiled the first one for me, but what to expect, it is called 2.
yes, so it is.
I shouldn't be mad at the game for spoiling the first one.
You should be mad at yourself for not playing the first one.
I am a little bit. I bought it, like, in May for the PlayStation 4. But then
chop chop, sucker.
Well, I don't like PlayStation 4 that much. but no, this game is what you would call, or what the kids would call, absolutely fucking incredible. You know, just as a standpoint, I think that this may be my favorite indie game to come out this year.
Oh, wow.
And I know that's a strong saying, especially when games like Celeste came out that I never played. But I'll play it next month when it's free.
There you go.
But as far as the games I've played this year, which take with a grain of salt, I've only played like 10 maybe, but this is definitely my favorite. If maybe it's close with No Man's Sky, because they're both fun, but for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
This game's a lot cheaper. So if you're looking for a much more accessible, easier game to get, that is fun. And my tied game of the year, go for this one. if you're looking for more expensive, go for the other one.
Well, let's get down to it. What is SteamWorld Dig 2?
It's Dig Dug, but Metroidvania. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, basically you're a miner. It's like all of those side-scrolling, blocky games like Terraria, except you can't build your own base. But you basically mine down this blocky architecture, and there's different types of blocks. So you have like your standard dirt that breaks in one hit. Then you have like stronger stone material that takes a few hits. And then you have like bricks that you have to have a jackhammer for, which you unlock later into the game. So basically you're just progressing down further and further into this mine. But there's a storyline to it. So it's not just like, oh, just go down here, collect mining, get more material, sell it, and then upgrade and repeat. It's not just a repetitive state of doing the same things over and over again. There's actually a storyline. There's different branching areas that are pretty cool and areas that are completely different from the rest of the game. Like, there's this one area that I really don't like with these weird snail things. It's beautiful, but the snails are really annoying. They're like these weird spiky snail things that they hide into their shell when you get close and then roll around really fast and throw spikes out. And they're basically impossible to kill unless you have...
Those things are dicks.
Yeah, the best way to kill them, in my opinion, is to get hit by them and let them take damage if you have that armor upgrade, which, you know, isn't the greatest tactic, but it's more manageable than trying to hit them without dying. Other than that, there's a lot of fun, unique secrets that are hidden within these weird challenge chambers that you can come into. Sometimes you'll just find a random door inside the mine that was blocked off, and if you mine down into it and you enter the door, all of a sudden you're in a challenge chamber where you can unlock a upgrade cog, as well as find a secret hidden item in there, or an artifact. And when you collect more artifacts, you get blueprints in exchange at the main town area, and those blueprints can be used with your cogs to upgrade your abilities. Like, you can get what I was talking about earlier with, like, the repelling damage. That's like, if somebody hits you, they take damage too. Or if somebody takes a throwable item at you and throws it at you, the first one to be thrown at you gets deflected, and then it has a 30-second cooldown. So you can't you can't abuse that. But it's a really good ability to have against those weird cult guys that throw the stupid spears at you, because those guys are assholes and they take a lot of hits. But doing that, it insta-kills them, and you get a little achievement for it, so it's really worth doing.
Yay.
of course you would find
the achievement to talk about.
Of course. Okay. This game is so good, I've started it twice. Because generally speaking, a lot of the times when I go into a review, sometimes I like to, if I'm not sure what to expect, I like to go into it with an alternate account first. That way I can play the game and play it to its full potential without feeling like, ooh, I could start a game I don't want to play. I wound up playing it. It took me like about half an hour to find out I really loved it. Then I was so into it that I didn't really realize I was still playing it on the alt. So I played it for about 2 hours on the alt. And then that was Saturday. I came back yesterday and played like 4 hours, almost beat the game before I had to go to bed for work, because I got so into it, and that I was playing it on my own account. So I wound up restarting the game and playing it like for real. I want to say I'm going to get the speedrun achievement, but I don't know what the time is, because it doesn't actually tell you that in game or in the achievement list. It just says get a gold badge in the speedrunning category at the end of the game, because there's different badges for how well you do. Like, there's a wealth badge, so the more money you collect, the better your badge is at the end of the game. Same with the secrets. If you collect all 42 secrets, which is a lot of secrets, and some of them are really hard to get because you have to complete challenges to get them. Like, some of the challenge rooms, they aren't hidden, but rather you have to, like, there's this one where there's a bunch of buttons and there's levers. And basically, if you ever hit one of the buttons, it resets a door, and so it locks, and then you have to go back and hit the lever and try to avoid hitting any of the buttons. So it's like platforming. Mm. And those are assholes, but you got to keep, redoing it. The thing is, the secret item in there is for not messing up once throughout the whole thing. So there's like three sections, and if you mess up the first section, you got to go back to the first lever. But if you get past the first section, you only ever have to go back to the second lever. However, to get the secret, you have to make sure to do it all correctly without one mistake. So I think that's probably going to be the hardest one. I haven't found like that many secrets. I think I only have 7 in the game. I was having way more luck finding secrets the first time around, and that's part of what makes me annoyed, because I wish I would have just started this originally online.
That'll teach you.
Yeah, it's just, you never know. You could end up with Plutobi. and I luckily didn't. I played that on an alt. No, but this game is incredible. There's a lot of fun, unique atmospheres. Like, there's the regular mining world where it just looks like a desert planet. And then there's also like these ancient, tomes or whatever. Like, there's just, it's a bunch of bricks, and it basically looks like people used to live there forever ago, or robots. I don't know if people ever existed in this life, because they really speak about it like robots are the only thing that are around for the most part. There's also like these weird underground areas with fluorescent mushrooms and stuff. And that's like the coolest area, but that's the one with the snails, so I don't like it.
Yeah, fucking snails.
And then there's this one world that I don't want to spoil because it's like pretty far into the game. So I don't want to give too much detail.
All right. Well, then without spoiling too much of the rest of the game, $20 on it. What do you think of it?
Oh, you can absolutely get the replay value out of it alone trying to get all the gold stars, because there's an asshole of an achievement for getting every single gold star in one run, which means I believe beating the game in under 4 hours, not dying once, collecting 15,000 treasure, and collecting all 42 secrets.
Damn, in 4 hours?
Yeah, that's the hard part is going to be combining the secrets and the time, because of course, you know, as an achievement hunter, I've discovered little cheapness. Like, the game doesn't save when you die until you press OK to respawn. So if you just dashboard right after dying, it doesn't count to death.
Yeah, there you go.
But that doesn't help you with getting the secrets in four hours, because there's 42 secrets and you still got to beat the game on top of it. So you got to beat the game and get all 42 secrets within 4 hours without dying and collecting $15,000 worth of treasure. It's like, oh my God, I don't know if I'll complete this one.
Well, I'm looking forward to you doing it.
I said the same thing about Siam, Speedrunners from Hell, though, and I beat every level in one run without dying. So
maybe, damn.
Yeah, that one was a tough one. This game's up there, though, with that one is like some of my favorite indie games that have ever come out on Xbox One. Like, this one's truly good. I do want to go back and play the first one, but at this point, I'm not sure if it's going to be tremendously disappointing just because this one's so much of an improvement, or if it's going to be more of the same fun.
It's more of the same fun. The first game's fantastic.
That's good to hear. I think instead of playing it on PlayStation 4, I'll probably just buy it on Xbox and just play it on Xbox.
There you go.
But $20, it's an absolute buy it. Like, 100%, no doubt. Like, you can't change my mind.
Sounds good.
You should stop trying to change my mind.
Okay, I will. CJ, it's always a pleasure having you on. I hope you have a great new year. And do you have any final words?
Merry yesterday Christmas.
Or, you know, like a couple days ago from when the episode comes out.
Oh, I got it. Can you dig it? Suckers! All right.
Next up, we got Pernell Vaughn joining. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, though. I need to get back on my break because this ain't right, man. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited that this is the last show of the year, and then I get to take 2 weeks off and just relax for a bit. I'm excited.
Rest, relaxation, breathing room, and yet at the same time, when you're back, I got this feeling that there's going to be a tsunami of new things because I don't feel like there's a break in releases. Like, this might be the only week where nothing heavy is coming out, and I may be wrong about that.
I hope so. I hope there's nothing coming out. Like, I want to enjoy my time off. I don't want to be like, oh, there's a game coming out that I want to cover on the show. Shit, what am I going to do? You know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to do a goddamn thing.
But you don't want to cover Barbie Quest?
Maybe. We'll talk after the show.
You gotta cover Barbie Quest. Just how it rolls. I mean, it wouldn't be right otherwise. How will people know if Barbie's adventures are worth partaking in?
I mean, it's a Barbie game. Of course it's worth partaking.
Damn right it is. Don't you forget it.
So how was your Christmas?
Honestly, not so bad, honest. I ended up staying up until 6 in the morning play Ease Book 1 and 2 on the TurboGrafx-16. And then I went to bed, woke up at 1 p.m., took a shower, and then went out to get dinner with, like, some friends. And then I went to my dad's house and had dinner with him. And I came home. And apparently, I got an unexpected present this year, because I'm kind of, like, anti-Christmas, not in the, whoa, Grinch anti-Christmas. Just more like, I feel like I lost what would make Christmas hit for me. So I'm just like, I want everybody else to celebrate it, but I'm just going to use it as a day off. But I ended up getting my stepmother bought me a freaking cast iron frying pan.
Nice.
I was like, wow, I am going to cook some mean dishes with this once I season it, rather. But how about you?
I mentioned it earlier on the show, but my mom bought me a shitload of Crystal Pepsi for Christmas, so that was awesome.
I just picture her, like, going to, like, different, like, gas stations every time she had to fill up. Like, you have any Crystal Pepsi? Yeah, let me check the back room.
Goodness. Loves this stuff.
No, there was a Dollar General down the street from my house that still had a bunch of Crystal Pepsi left because it was only for the summer. And I saw that they had it there, and I'm like, Mom, if you want an idea for a Christmas gift, Dollar General has Crystal Pepsi. Just grab me a bunch of bottles. And she fucking did. And that's 14 bottles of Crystal Pepsi.
Now we need to hear that, Pepsi. You have a fan that is buying you out of stock. Now, if you could just bring back Kona and Pepsi Blue.
Oh, my God. We'd be gone Pepsi somewhere. Blue.
Pepsi. Yeah, see?
Oh, Pepsi Blue. Oh, my God. I loved Pepsi Blue so much.
Because it was bangers. It was like a berry Pepsi. It's like, get on that, guys. It's like, you know there is room for soda innovation over here. Coke is kicking your ass. We had feisty cherry and like twisted mango and mess. Meanwhile, you chumps are sitting over here with Pepsi and Diet Pepsi, and now Pepsi with less calories than that. Like, come on, shake it up a bit. Give me reasons to slowly inject, you know, condensed sugar into my body, because I'm fighting you. Fight you, baby. And eat new weird flavors to bring me back to Sugar Town. And that's honestly how it works. There was a period in time where I was like, I'm on a hardcore diet. No more treats, no more sugary things. And I was doing good for a while. And that was when Oreo started ramping up their weird temporary flavors bid. So every time you're like, okay, I'll take a breather because I'm going to try these new cookies. And just when you're done, a new type comes out. Now, graham cracker, peanut butter, and chocolate. Stop this! Stop! You went uninnovative for 15 years. More than that, in effect. And now all of a sudden, now that I want to lose weight, you got to come out with freaking like strawberry shortcake and cherry cola cookies. What is this? Is someone spying on me? Is that what the Amazon Echo is for?
Yes.
I don't know. Which, by the way, I'm actually getting one for free. I think that's freaking hilarious. Like, you want this free spy device? We're going to give it to you. It's like, no one gives you anything for free. I know what that's all about. Sly devils.
I've given you a couple of free games.
That is true. That is true. But then you want reviews for them. You want my opinion.
No, I've given you a couple that weren't review. I'm just like, here, have a game.
That is true. But you don't want my review? You don't want my opinion on the games you gave me? What is this, man? What is this? I thought you valued my opinion.
I buy your opinion.
Hi-yo!
Speaking of, you got four games to talk about. Should we get started?
Let's get down to business.
All right, first game to talk about is called Road Redemption, developed by EQ Games, Pixel Dash Studios, and Saber Interactive, published by Tripwire Interactive, released December 19th on Xbox One for $19.99. Road Redemption lets you lead a biker gang on an epic journey across the country in this driving combat road rage adventure. Huge campaign, dozens of weapons, full four-player co-op split screen, and online multiplayer. Purnell, tell us about Road Redemption.
I think it's funny because I'm hearing this description and I'm like, yeah, I do like Road Redemption. But then as you were describing, I'm like, whoa, whoa, slow down, Chachi, slow down. you're saying things I'm not getting. But so Road Redemption, for anybody who is not familiar with this, even from my screenshots, is pretty much one man or maybe one man and his friends desire to see Road Rash, the classic biker beatdown series, get revived in the modern day. Then this game is pretty much that, but it gives me mixed vibes because is this a matter of nostalgia biting or what? But let's get down to the wire and we'll get down to this. So the main game is a sort of roguelike campaign. And what it is, as Joe described, you are a biker amongst a gang of bikers trying to track down an assassin who murdered the head biker. Think like the Warriors, basically, but with motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
And, everyone is basically trying to track this assassin down and kill him. And what this means for you, the player, is you are going on a quest across the United States on your bike to track him down. And as the way it progresses is you go through a series of randomly generated stages. You know, so basically it'll create like a random track, random items that can spawn. No one will spawn. It'll just be sitting on the track. And random objectives, too. Amongst a set of four potentials, there's like the takedown mode where you have to kill a certain number of bikers before, you know, they get to the finish line, or you might have to do like a time trial, which means beat the level in a certain amount of time. There will be survive, in which case the cops and bikers are just on your tuchus, and you just pretty much have to survive to the finish lines. Basically, the most aggressive of the options. And then there's like just like a normal race where it's like coming first or between first and like third place to get to the end. And if you succeed, on completing the objective, you'll get a cash reward and progress to the next stage. And if you fail at the objective, you'll take a, typically from what I noticed, a health detriment. Like you'll lose 25% of your maximum health for failing the objective. You'll still be able to move on, but you'll be moving on a lot weaker than when you started. Yeah. So, and at the end of each race or each segment, you will go to a sort of like store. And the store will allow you to buy various upgrades, such as like new weapons that you can use on the races or additional health or nitro. Nitro being how you boost across the track. You just added bumps. You might get armor that can increase your defense or give you more experience points. Experience points, that's there too. Because, like I said, this is a roguelite racer. And every time you end up dying, because if you basically run out of hit points or something, you will go to a level up screen where it will allow you to purchase permanent upgrades with the experience points you've earned during that run. Experience points do not carry over, so you have to spend what you've acquired at that time. And these upgrades can be things like permanent damage boosters, permanent health boosters, new motorcycles to select at the beginning of the race, new bikers to use at the beginning of the race. And what those tend to entail is like a bike will have like due to the different stats like max speed, acceleration, handling, you know, the usual bike stats.
Yeah.
And the different bikers have different sort of like builds to start. Like one might start with a certain type of weapon, 100% health and 75% nitro. Or in some, like there's some weird ones. Like I came across this one guy who every time he takes every time he uses his boost, he loses health. But every time he kills a guy, he gets health. So it's like a weird balance there. But it's a cool sort of mechanic. And even the battles themselves are kind of like upgraded a bit, because in like Road Rash, you basically were limited to hitting a guy with a weapon and or punching him and hopefully knocking the weapon out of his hand or just knocking him down. Yeah. In this game, there are multiple weapon types. There's like there's bladed weapons, there's guns, there are bombs, and there's like melee weapons. The bombs are generally used for like attacking large truck vehicles. Blades are good for decapitating people's heads, one-hit kills, but in order to do that, you have to knock their helmet off. Otherwise, the blades don't do much damage. Bats are good for knocking helmets off or just general multi-purpose, and guns, I don't like the guns. Guns are pretty much like you can aim the gun and spray on the track, but I ain't got time for that. I want to play Road Rash, not Grand Theft Auto.
I was a fan of the C4, just slapping on a biker and cruising away from him and then just hearing an explosion and seeing my stats go up.
Yes, like the C4 was like a wonderful addition, whereas I wasn't big on the gun addition, but that's a mile may vary sort of thing. You might love the guns. You might hate the explosives. You shouldn't hate the explosives, but the potential is there. But they're basically, this guy did a pretty good job of like saying, okay, I liked Road Rash, but let me do a little bit of tweaking to make it more mine. And you can switch between the different weapons, the bombs, the guns, the blade, the melee, with the press of a control pad, but as long as you have a weapon in your inventory to switch to. So you get this weird dynamic of trying to determine what the best weapon is for the job as you're running and, you know, melee bashing and fighting for your life on the track. In addition to that, there is a sort of, I don't know. I will say that one thing that bugged me, like I should mention this right off the bat, like I said earlier, everything's randomly generated. Now, my usual argument, if you've heard me review games on this show in the past, you should have, I hope you have, is that I'm not big on random generation in my randomly generated areas or procedurally generated areas in my games. And I was all ready to be like, what a bad design choice. I don't believe this. But then something clicked for me. I remember playing Road Rash 2. I remember playing Road Rash 3D. I was obsessed with Road Rash 2 more so than 3D. And while Road Rash 3D had definitely had a pre-established track because it was one massive world map, I don't even remember if Road Rash 2 had pre-designed courses. I just remember you going to locations, music would play, and you beat the tar out of dudes. My memories of Road Rash 2 are, I am on a bike hurting people. I don't remember any particulars about races, special turns, any moments that made me say, man, this is where I was really tested on handling my bike. And once that hit, I realized that Road Rash was about beating the tar out of people and having fun doing it on your bike. And does Road Redemption carry that torch? The answer is yes, it does. I genuinely stopped giving two hoot magoots about the course design and just worried about staying on my bike and beating the crap out of people, which is what I thought is what I wanted out of the game. And they did a great job with that. And they added a little other weird things. Like there's moments where you can like jump between rooftops, like weird stuff like that. But those are things that Road Rash never had. But it's a genuinely quality game. And if you just find yourself not really interested in doing the campaign mode, there is also like a basic single race mode where you start out with three courses. And I believe these courses aren't even randomly generated. I think they're actually structured specific courses. But you race on those. And if you get enough like gold or different trophies, depending on the stage requirements, you earn enough trophies, you'll unlock additional stages. It's like between like 16 and 20 stages you can unlock. It's a fair amount of courses in the game. And each of these courses have like the occasional like side ramp that you can take as like a shortcut or just as like an alternate route that has more items on it, which is kind of nice. Like, I genuinely had a good time with this game. It is quality. I can't even think of any like real performance issues that I had. I know loading took a little bit of time, but that could have just well been my computer rocking it on Steam.
Yeah.
But once I got past the actual loading issue, the game ran fine for me.
Yeah, loading times were noticeable on Xbox. I played on Xbox. I will say the one thing I wish the game did was I wish it let you carry over your XP. I can understand why they have the decision to, you know, use it or lose it. But it sucks when you could buy an upgrade for 200 XP and you're at like 187.
Yeah, that is true. I noticed that. And I feel like you have to definitely get through like at least three races before your XP even is enough to bother buying anything. So yeah. If you don't make it past at least three races, forget it. You just wasted. Well, I guess technically, yeah. I mean, outside of the I had fun playing this, you wasted a run. So, but I mean, I guess it's just a matter of like, you know, hopefully by that point in time, you're doing well enough that you're at least getting through three races on a session. Because, I mean, early on, I was definitely like, crap, I died on the second race. But I got doing a little bit better. But then the upgrades on that are actually fairly slow as well. Though, I'm not sure if that's a detriment, a compliment, or neither. Because, I mean, yeah, upgrades, just like any roguelite, they're meant to make future runs easier. I feel like just as well as you can get upgrades to make your runs easier, your skill also increases as you play. And who to say you won't beat the game with maybe half the skill tree filled up, if not less. You never know. Just true. A matter of how good you get at the game. Don't be so reckless.
Very true. So, but overall, $20 on this one. What do you think of it?
I'd say if you were a fan of Road Rash, it's a definite buy. But if you have no idea what the hell a Road Rash is, it's worth trying it at least. Because this is a racing style that I think, oddly enough, you may agree with me on this. I feel like this is a racing style of game, a style of racing game that is underrepresented these days. Because most combative racing games at this point are like the Mario Kart racers where you throw items at each other. Whereas yeah. This is like up in your face. And I even forgot to mention, there's like other combat. You can like kick people. You can like do like a deflection and counterattack, which I barely ever did because I was too busy trying not to die. I wasn't trying to... But if you want to get, you know, technical in your combat, there's other options in there too. So yeah, definitely at least a try at minimum. Buy it if you like Road Rash and miss the series, because it definitely captures the essence of what made Road Rash to me what it was.
I agree. I'm going to go all out and say just buy it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's not that expensive. It's one of those games that's just mindless fun that you can pick up and play for a couple of races and then do something else and come back to it later. It just keeps me wanting to go one more race, one more race, one more race.
And the music's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
I like it.
Good stuff. But next game to talk about is called Omega Strike, developed by WobblyWare, published by Digirati, released December 24th on the Switch for $14.99. Omega Strike is a Metroidvania with a vast open-ended world and multiple playable characters. Explore the world, learn new abilities, upgrade your weapons, and defeat Dr. Omega and his mutant armies. Fernell, what's Omega Strike?
Omega Strike's a Metroidvania. The end.
Yay.
So Omega Strike is a game where you start out with three characters, and each of those characters has like a different unique ability. The one guy can double jump, there's another guy who can push blocks, and there's another guy who looks cool. That's his ability. And they each also have a different type of gun. One has a sort of machine gun-esque rifle, one has a short distance burst shotgun, and the other has a sort of lobbing and tumbling grenade launcher. But what I could tell at the start, though, the guns had similar amounts of attack power. They just functioned differently, which means they did well in different situations. Also, being the fact that I felt like they gave the double jump guy the worst of the weapons because, hey, why would you not want to use the double jump guy if he had a great gun to match? So the idea is that as you're playing this game, you're running through shooting these weird zombie monsters, trying to get to a certain point, and then almost immediately into the beginning of the game, the main villain shows up and kidnaps two of your friends. And that introduces pretty much the main hook of the game, which is, in addition to trying to stop Dr. Omega, you also have to rescue your two buddies that you originally started the game with, which leads you down the ubiquitous hole of need new abilities by beating guys and saving friends, which allows you to access new areas. But honestly, the game itself is a good time. It was one of those games where, like, I started playing and thinking, okay, I'm just going to get started on it just to get my feet wet so I can be prepared to go all in on, like, a decent review. And then I ended up spending a couple hours playing it straight because it is a genuinely fun game. I will say the one weird thing about that hit me, though, is that, and this is a mileage may vary sort of thing, I feel like things that make Metroidvania games awesome are upgrades and discovering new areas and secret areas. Okay. This game, the things that you can find are money, which can be used to buy upgrades, life cubes, where if you get about 4 to 6 of them, you can go to a priest at the main camp and he will give you an extra health bar. Think of, like, a health, you know, heart containers, basically. Yeah. And that's pretty much it, because the upgrades to your moves come from typically from beating bosses, because you'll beat a boss and he'll drop, like, a device, and then when you pick up and say, hey, now you can do this roll, which allows you want this specific character to roll when you press the button. But that's pretty much how you get the moves. And as far as the gun upgrades go, each gun has between, like, 1 and 3 upgrade stats for the power and the range of the gun. And that's purchased with money from the main town as well. So what ends up happening here is that you'll be looking for all these cool, like, hey, find a secret alcove. Let me see what's over here. And when you find it, it's always money. Like, it's always 30 gold. And you're like, I like money. It's good for upgrading my stuff. But it would feel a little more exciting if I could find something that wasn't money or a cube. You know, like, give me, like, what if some of the gun parts were hidden on the map? You know, it's like, oh, cool, and I got the scope for the grenade launcher, you know? Like, it would give you that a better sense of discovery. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a Metroidvania game. I wasn't going to stop looking for secrets regardless of how jazzed I was for what was there. I just wanted to fill the freaking map. I just feel like, just as a general consensus or descriptive for a game, I feel like in the genre that is as flooded as the Metroidvania genre has become, especially on the Switch, you definitely want to get your secret game up. But the meat and potatoes of the title being gameplay, graphics, and music, I feel like this hit all of those notes. I did have a genuinely enjoyable time playing the game, though fair warning to those who may not be aware, or, well, you haven't played it yet, so of course you're not aware. The levels themselves, it's a double-edged sword here. They're pretty big. So you might go to an environment and be hopping and bopping and shooting and looting, trying to get to the next boss. And then at one point, you might hit a moment where you go, I'm still on this stage? Where's the freaking end? And that just means you're still running, gunning, and shooting. Some people might go, you know what? Can't have too much of a good thing. Other people might go, well, you know, I've been doing this thing a lot. I want somewhere new to go. And your mileage may vary based on that statement there, for sure. Like, I enjoyed the game, but there were definitely some moments where I was like, where the hell is the boss? Especially if I was looking for, like, a save point somewhere out in the map. I was like, I need to save. My health's getting kind of low, man. I play on hard mode, though, so you play on normal, you might not have that, where's my health at? You might not have that problem, but there was definitely moments like, I need to get some health soon, man. Where's this thing at? But the game itself, the music was good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fact that I liked the graphical layout of the game, and I enjoyed the cut swap between the characters. It's weird, because initially, this is a weird thing that you come across. You start to sometimes wonder if the character swap is just another way of feeling like there's more when it's about the same. Like, what if Sarge had the roll, the arm, the shimmy, and the double jump, and these things? Would it make it a better or worse game? I don't think it would. It's just it's the same game, but different, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I guess it means by having it, maybe it just means it injects a little bit more personality to the game, because rather than switch guns and ability and have all the abilities, now instead you're saying, okay, when I'm this guy, he only has this gun and these abilities. So I guess maybe that is the gameplay design change. It's like Sarge can't have the double jump plus his cool rifle. If you want the double jump, you have to be using the shotgun guy. Or if you want to be pushing blocks or doing, like, using explosive rounds or something, you're going to use the bear pushing guy who doesn't have a double jump. So you have to plan around that for combat scenarios. And when bosses come into play, that may be a factor. Like, some bosses are pretty straightforward. Like, you can use one guy and just beat him. But there were definitely some bosses where I was like, okay, my strategy to dodge the attack is to use this guy, shoot the bullets, then jump down, switch to the guy who can double jump, run across, double jump, and then switch back to the guy with the other gun so I can do the damage again. That was a fun little mechanic, too, being able to switch up the guys back and forth as I played. Though, one thing that I want to mention, that if the company is listening to this, I want them to respond to you on the Twitter or whatnot, that I wasn't sure if this was a glitch or just something I didn't notice, but there was a quest in the game where a character said, hey, I need you to save my friend, and if you do so, I'll reward you. And when I went to save the friend, I came back, and the character said, thank you for saving my friend. Here are the schematics to a location I was scouting out. And the game told me, you found that you got access to this location, which I assume was like maybe the last stage of the game. And when I went to the helicopter is how you transition between the different environments. You can fly to them. I had two levels left to unlock before I got the schematics. But when I went to the helicopter after getting them, I had two new stages to go to. And I wasn't sure if they intended for that other location to be unlocked in a different way, or if I was supposed to get both of them from the one character's reward. But don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about it. I was like, hey, cool new location to blow stuff up in. But worth mentioning in case that wasn't intentional and I happened to stumble across something I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
So, but all in all, I mean, the game is very much enjoyable. I mean, it's kind of like what I wished, as far as how the game, the map is done, it's what I kind of wish Mercenary Kings did. So, I mean, that's definitely a click right there, because I'm not sure if you played Mercenary Kings or not, which was another attempt at like running gun revival, but that game got really repetitive with how they did the stages. But I feel like this game was good for that, where it's like, hey, here's a map, you're just going to go here, do what you need to do, and get the hell out, you know? And it works. It's fun.
Well, then overall, $15, what do you think?
I think it's a buy, though. Yeah, but I'll go with say with a buy. If you're itching for a Metroidvania game that involves gunplay, I think this is a quality time. Like I said, just take what I said to heart, though. Don't just go in there going, well, Purnell said buy it, so I'm buying it. If the criticisms I mentioned click with you, then it's a definite buy, because I had a great time playing it.
Awesome. And it's funny that you mention an overabundance of Metroidvanias, because that was the fourth game on the show, and it was the third Metroidvania.
What were the other ones?
Sundered and SteamWorld Dig 2.
Oh, my freaking... Wait, what system did SteamWorld Dig 2 hit?
It just hit Xbox last month.
That better have got a bite.
It did.
Oh, thank heaven. That game is freaking swanky.
You would know that if you listened to the show that didn't release yet, Purnell.
I know! My time travel skills are flawed!
Oh, man. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Pipe Push Paradise, developed by Corey Martin in Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati, released December 24th on the Switch for $10.99. Pipe Push Paradise is a difficult open-world puzzle game about plumbing. You've arrived on a lonely island faced with a hero's calling. Rise to the occasion, push pipes around, and restore this paradise to its former glory. Purnell, tell us about it.
Dude, that description is so damn accurate. I'm glad they say difficult in the description, because this game is hard as balls. So a lot of games, when you buy them, they usually start you out, you know, they ramp you up. Here's like 10 easy stages, and then, oh, now we're going to the medium difficulty, and then here's the hard. This game is hard from the second stage on. It does not screw around. And it's amazing, because the only thing you can do in the game is push pipes, but it's hard. So the idea is that you are walking around this island, and I honestly don't feel like the island matters so much aside from just some flavor text between different NPCs that are just kind of there. And it's kind of funny having them talk, because they always kind of talk to the main character, and she says nothing back, and they're like, okay, don't say nothing, then we don't care. But the main meat and potatoes, and pretty much all the entirety of the game, is the plumbing puzzles. So usually, when you think of a sliding block puzzle game, it's really what I just said. You go up to the side of a block, and you can press it, and that's all there is to it. But this game does a little different. So the overall goal is to, when you get to an environment, you'll find a location or more where water is flowing out of a pipe. And then you'll see another location that is a pipe that has no water flowing into it. And then a bunch of pipe segments lying around the ground. You need to connect the pipes together to create one continuous flow of water from one end to the other. Sounds easy? Bullshit. So they added one interesting element, a very simple thing that makes this game brutal. And that is the fact that pipes can flip on their sides. So if you are pushing a lengthwise pipe, just lengthwise, it'll roll. But if you are pushing a pipe that kind of has a curve, like, or you would say like an L shape, depending on where you push the pipe, it'll stand up. And then if you push it again, it'll roll over. So like flip, flop, flip. And that element alone, it took me a bit just to wrap my head around trying to manipulate a pipe, just to do something as simple as making it turn around. I still don't quite have that down, even now. But I still found myself enjoying the attempts of pushing and flipping and flopping. And even to the moments where there's like holes in the ground, you got to push the pipe into the freaking ground and you got to kind of push it along that way. And there's other elements where like sometimes you have to create like an archway where the pipe will actually go over your head. So you can like stand the pipe up, walk underneath it, get to the other side, and then push another pipe off to the side there. It gets to be brutal. And like I said, it starts like this from the beginning of the game. So it's weird because on some hands I want to go, oh, that's a detriment to the game. But really, I don't think it is. One, the game does measure each puzzle by easy, medium, hard, and expert. There's like little like colorful indicators that tell you which type of puzzle it is. But secondly of all, there's like a certain little bit of respect to the game saying, there's only one mechanic, man. You push pipe. How easy do you need it to be? You don't get used to this. You're pushing pipes around. Just do it. You know, they give you one level where it's like, here are the pipes. Here's how they work. And then that's it. Every level after that is a mixture between the ED to the expert type stages. And you just have to deal with it. And it feels really rewarding. You're like, I figured out this puzzle. The water's flowing. Do these people give two shits? No, they don't. But that's okay. I feel accomplished, and that's what matters to me. You can eventually warp around the island once you find like different like bomb torches, not torches, up campfires that you can light. So I guess if you like say decide to skip optional puzzle and go further into the island, you can always warp back to touch up on those. I would like to tell you what happens if you unlock beat every puzzle, but screw that. I didn't beat every nothing. So, I ain't afraid to admit it. This game hits you in the jewels, but it hits you in the jewels in a fantastic way. I originally wanted to review this game because I'm a kind of a sucker for an old game called Pipe Dream. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that or if you remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, love Pipe Dream. And I was kind of, even though this game is kind of nothing like that, it just still tapped me because, like, pipes and water. Like, Pipe Dream. I want to do this. But ultimately, it was a great time. Like, I enjoy this game. It's simple. It's one of those very simple to explain, very tough to master games. And you're not necessarily locked into making a mistake. There's, like, a reverse course button where you can kind of retract steps. You can do a button, push a button to start the entire stage over. And even if you push that button by mistake, you can still say, okay, I didn't mean to restart the whole stage, and push the go back button, and it still resets you back to before you reset the level. So that's pretty convenient too, I think. It's just a good game. I feel like the only thing I wish there was like an option to like select between like 10 different music tracks or something, because those island tones could get old if you're just like trying to solve one puzzle and that track is just looping. Like, you're going to get tired of that looping music track, something fierce. But I mean, sometimes you just turn the damn game down. Simple as that. But honestly, from a game mechanics perspective, this is a quality puzzler. And even though you might look at the box and say, oh, there's only like 48 or 50 puzzles or so in the game, don't let the number fool you, because you might be smiling, you might be grinning with glee just to get to stage 8. So
damn.
The time is going to come out of you succeeding at the game and actually pushing forward, because like I said, there are no mook levels in this game except for the very first one. You'll earn every win. And it will be satisfying as you do it. That's what you should be playing. Well, I won't say should, because everybody plays for their own reasons, but that's what I play puzzlers for. I play puzzlers to actually solve tough quandaries and genuinely just not necessarily feel accomplished, but let's be blunt. It makes you feel good to solve tough puzzles. It just does. That's the whole idea of games for me. It's a reward system. You play a game, you feel rewarded by succeeding at something, or you feel like you acquire something by buffing your character to maximum levels. And in this case, it's the accomplishment angle. I connected the pipes. The water is flowing. My mom couldn't do this crap. I feel good.
Nice.
Pipes.
Well, overall, $11. What do you think?
I think it's a solid purchase, man.
I might have to jump on this one. It sounds tough as hell, but rewarding.
Yes. I mean, yes. I mean, like, it's worth staying. Like, I mean, just to reiterate this one last time. I mean, yeah, they could have put a bunch of easy stages in the game. But honestly, that's just padding to me at this point. And there are a few easy levels in the game, but they are even hard. They're just easy for the game standards. But, I mean, I like the rewarding. I mean, just come in, be ready for the challenge, and then rather than have, like, oh, I beat the 10 Mook stages and I'm stuck on stage 11, you can say I beat the 5 stages, and I feel good about that. Take yourself some time and effort.
Nice. Good stuff. But one last game for you to talk about is called Odium to the Core, developed by Dark One Games, published by Dark One Games and Cubic Games. Released December 25th on the Switch, December 26th on Xbox One for $4.99. Odium to the Core is a challenging single-button music-based game with a dark monochromatic art style. Guide Odium through dangerous and intense music-fueled levels to eliminate the spreading corruption, reach the core, and save the world. Purnell, what is Odium to the Core?
There's a trend for this episode for me, and that is fun games whose plots I don't care about. This game has followed suit. I feel like if Okanoka was on this episode as well, it could have been a bona fide hat trick. Both for that and also for the fact that this game is also bloody hard. The description is pretty straightforward. Press a button to do a thing, and it's the only button you'll ever need, and you'll still fail a lot. So yes. What the hell am I talking about? This game is an auto-scroller, and the speed of which the level progresses is solely based on the BPM of the song. So you could be moving slowly, sometimes it can just ramp up, and sometimes it can slow down. And as the game moves, your character just, I guess, sometimes the level will shift, and sometimes you'll shift. But for the most part, the level just is what it is. And when you press the A button, your guy will ascend. That's it. He'll just ascend. So he's already moving forward on his own, but he'll ascend when you hold the button. And when you let the button go, you will descend. And your job is to determine just the right amount of ascension or descension required to get through the obstacles and proceed from one end of the stage to the next. This is not as easy as I made it sound. In fact, it's really freaking hard. But I like that about it. So as you're doing this, there are between the obstacles that are on the level, there are also like little bubbles that pop up. And as you collect those bubbles, they will give you points. And these contribute to two goals that happen for every stage. There is the collect every orb in one run. Good luck with that goal. Yeah. And then there's the high score goal, which is a bit easier, except for there's one caveat that I didn't mention, which is that your score kind of increases aside from the orbs. It just increases as you proceed through the level, but the score increases faster the less you press the button. So if you're a meticulous type who wants to constantly kind of keep them at a specific level and kind of pace yourself, you will get crappy scores because the game intends for you to be like, okay, don't press the button until I really have to. And I bet there may be areas where the game may get a little laxer on just how much they penalize you from constantly, you know, finessing the button presses. But early on, even it's like, well, I might have pressed that a little bit too much because I just barely missed the high score. But, I mean, so it's going to be a matter of, like, even though you know you can finesse something area, certain areas once you get better at the game, you'll still be challenging yourself to not finesse anything and just kind of take the challenge of just coasting through zones. In addition to those two things I mentioned, there's one other goal because, you know, like I mentioned, my usual joke on the show is 3 stars. The third star in this game is finding secret padlocks, and they're just like secret tiles that you can find hidden on stages, usually in really annoying places. But if you find the amount that are hidden on the stage, you'll acquire that third star. This game is challenging. This game is hard. This game is fun. I have to definitely say, if you do not like action-based challenges, even if it's one button, buyer beware. But if you do like challenging games and you don't mind the fact that one button is all you need to be challenged, this game is quality. This is a legit fun time. And again, the music is pretty good. I want to say it's like a, I don't know how to describe it, because like it's EDM or like a boom, 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 boom. Like it's a lot of bass. But
I just call it electronic.
There we go. Let's
just the catch-all electronica. So one of my friends referred to this game as Flappy Bird Goes to a Rave.
I like that. There we go. We should call this Flappy Rave.
Flappy Rave.
There we go. Yeah, but Flappy Rave is a quality time. As long as you know what you're getting going into it.
Well, then $5, what do you think?
Just because I want to actually say it. I call this a fuck it, why not?
Nice.
$5, but it's also genuinely fun, too.
Yeah, it's only $5, so fuck it. Just grab it.
Yep.
Especially if you're a fan of tough game. Like, this is... you mentioned Pipe Push Paradise was hard right out of the gate. So is Odium to the Core. Like, this game doesn't fuck around. It is hard as soon as you start the game.
Yeah, kid you not. When I first started the game, they're like... I mean, I didn't know it was a one-button game when I started the game up. So the game starts and the guy is moving. The game's like, press the button. And I press the button and I died. Like, what am I doing? Try it again. I died. I died 5 more times before I realized, oh, I hold the button and he tilts. Okay, this makes sense. But it was so weird to me. So at least we gave you the tip. At the beginning of the game, holding the button makes him tilt. Don't feel confused about why the hell do I keep crashing into this wall.
And you know a game is tough when it has 9 different achievements related to dying a certain number of times. 9 of them.
And you will get those achievements too.
Yeah, it starts off with die 10 times, then 50, 100, 200, 500, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, and 10,000 times.
Well, we gotta be honest. I feel like some of those are just like, this is hard! Though the game is hard, but I don't foresee 10,000 deaths, even if I maxed it out. That's a lot of dying.
There's already 2 people who have the achievement on Xbox.
Yeah, but that's the thing about that, though. That's not tough, because if they were achievement farming, they could have started the game and just crashed into the wall 10,000 times.
True. I wouldn't
past anybody to do that, but for the sake of it, let's just assume they put all their moxie into the game and they just happened to die that many times.
Maybe.
We know they didn't. We know they didn't. It's crashing the wall. Are you keeping track? I've been taking tick marks. I've used 5 pages of paper so far, so we're getting there.
Oh, shit. Well, Purnell, it seems like you had a good lineup of games. Do you have any fun New Year's plans?
I usually go to Chicago, but this year I am not, so my New Year's plans are maybe not have any sleep and play some backlog, though I may go to a board game get-together. We'll see. I don't know. Or maybe even go straight wild and go to a nightclub.
Ooh.
That's not gonna happen. I'm not that kind of guy. But who knows? The night is young, and the year is over.
Yes, it is. Thank God. Fuck this year.
Don't say that, because it's not like 2019 is going to be kicking rocks either. Shit.
You know, new year, a whole new start. We'll see.
That is true. This will be the year I get the gym right. I'm getting on that treadmill, baby. This will be the one.
Yeah, this will definitely be the one. No, it won't.
No, well, I'm going to be a nice spit of Simpsons. I'm going to watch backlog episodes of The Good Place, and I'm going to feel all right about it.
Oh, man. Oh, Purnell, always good. Do you have any final words?
Those were the words. Oh, Purple Monkey Dishwasher.
All right, and finally tonight, we got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going all right.
How was your Christmas in Japan?
Oh, it was fun. We got to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken, and
that's what you go to Japan for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, bought some old ass Super Nintendo games. Went to the Square Enix Cafe, things like that.
Nice.
Everybody's the Dragon Quest Builders 2 just came out in Japan, so it's like all along the streets you could hear, you know, Dragon Quest music going on. Nice. I was like, this is my kind of place. And then I just flew back today, actually, and it was one of those, because of time zone type things, I left Japan at 4:30 p.m. on today, which would be the 26th, and I arrived in Austin at 5 p.m. on the 26th.
So it was only a half hour trip.
Yeah, exactly. Only a half hour. It seemed like longer, but lost no time.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, exactly. I barely had time to play four games.
So they kept you busy on your trip?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's lots to do and less time to do it in.
Always. Oh, should we get into these?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Your first game to talk about is called The Keep, developed and published by Cinemax, which is a different Cinemax than the one that most people are used to.
Not that Cinemax.
Yeah, different one. Released December 20th on the Switch for $17.99. Enter the Keep is an unsung hero on a quest to destroy the mighty wizard Watrous. Do you know the name?
Yeah, that's good.
Watrous. Like okay.
That actually is it.
Is it?
Yeah. Sweet. It's like Watrous or something, or Watrous.
Watrous. Watrous. Whatever.
It should be Waitress.
Mattress.
Waitress.
Explore the dark and complex corridors, treacherous prisons, and subterranean realms in this first-person dungeon crawler featuring real-time tactical combat, a unique rune magic system, and puzzle solving. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, The Keep. Well, this game actually came out first. Well, I don't know about first, but it did come out a while ago, like a couple of years ago, on the 3DS. And I actually picked it up at some point. I know I bought it. I didn't review it or anything. And I quite liked it. So whenever the Switch version was announced, I, you know, definitely got to nab that one. And, yeah, so this is basically, it's kind of a comparison to the 3DS version, which, I mean, you know, to be fair, I never got super far in the 3DS version because this game's kind of hard, but at least I have enough to go by. So The Keep is an interesting, a rare bird of an RPG. That is to say, it's a first person, which is already a little bit rare for US systems anyway. I mean, you know, besides the Elder Scrolls. But, you know, it's a first-person RPG, but this one is actually more grid-based. That is to say, you move one block at a time rather than in a fluid, continuous motion. A little bit like a wizardry-type game. And your attacks, like, it basically, it does act a lot like, well, not wizardry, but like... I'm going to say Dungeons and Dragons, Warriors of the Eternal Sun in first person mode, or like Might and Magic, where it's first person and you're moving one block at a time, but everything's still operating in real time. So when an enemy runs up to you, it just starts attacking and you got to do your thing. So in the original 3DS version, the way you would attack is that there would be a 3x3 grid, and you would swipe the stylus across three blocks on the grid in order to make a horizontal attack on one of three levels, or a diagonal attack or something like that, in order to, you know, attack the enemy, I guess Dragon Quest sword style, if anybody ever played that. So this game, for whatever reason... in portable mode, it does not have a touch interface.
Really?
So they've completely changed the controls to feature only the Joy-Cons, and that is to say, it doesn't even support the Pro Controller, which is strange to me because it doesn't have motion control either. But the Pro Controller just did not work on this, so I don't know.
Weird.
Yeah. So with the Joy-Cons, either in portable or TV mode, you now basically hold down the R shoulder button and then swipe the right stick to the right or up and down to select one of three levels. I'm not sure if the diagonal strikes are still there, but so, you know, if a rat's nibbling at your heels, then, you know, you gotta swipe low, Sweet Chariot, and and get rid of that sucker. Or if, you know, it's more of a totally inept guard, then I say this because there's a couple of times in the game where you get captured and all of your items and weapons taken. But, you know, there's a guard that you have to take down, and if you try to take him down with your fist, it doesn't work. But you can take him down just by grabbing a torch off the wall and, like, beating him to death. And this is a fully armored guard, so I think that's that either speaks really well of our hero or really poorly of that guard.
And his armor.
And his armor, which you can't take because it's not Skyrim. Enemies disintegrate, and they may leave you one item, and it's usually a potion or something. Anyway, but so yeah, this this game is it's a little bit old school as far as that goes. So it's one of those things where as soon as you start playing, you're going to feel inundated by menus, even though it's a live action game. So you've got your map, which you can you can make it big or small or disappear entirely, but you will need that map. This is a dungeon crawler after all. You've got your inventory section, which is controlled by the D-pad on the left side, your movements, which are controlled by the stick on the left side, your strafing, which is controlled either by the left bumper or shoulder, apparently. And then on your right side, you have all of your like attack menu type stuff. So really, although this game may appear to be kind of breezy at first, like you really have to get to know the menu system, because on top of the attack menu, which I described, there is a magic menu which exists on this whole other plane. It's you have to access a rune menu and then select three runes. Now, this is something I'm used to because it was a feature of Ultima Underworld, which is the original first-person RPG and one of my favorite games. So this seemed like second nature to me, but other people may spend a little more time in the reading the tutorial scroll or something, which it does put a tutorial scroll in your inventory and then teaches you how to throw it away.
Oh, God.
Because it has a separate inventory, and then it has an on-hand inventory, and then it has a hand part of your inventory, which is that's the kind of menuing we're talking about here. So, you know, you've got like three different item management inventories that you have to learn how to juggle. And then, yeah, like I said, you choose your runes, and that chooses your spell. You get modifiers to your rune set that can make your magic different or better, and the game doesn't really provide you a whole lot of guidance as to what runes do what, so, but the other thing is that your magic recovers really quickly, so it's actually kind of cool to just experiment.
That's good.
Yeah, and also your life and stamina, which is your stamina is your ability to swing your weapon, also refill fairly quickly, so battles can get really intense, especially by the third level where you're facing a whole bunch of pits where you can fall through and have a spider basically eat you like immediately.
Nice.
But you know, if you survive an encounter, then you don't have a lot of recovery time needed for the next one. But this game actually, like, although it has the combat aspects, and it's actually, once you get used to it, it's pretty fun. But the game is actually pretty reliant on puzzles. There's a lot of picking up a stone from a plate on the floor here, putting it there, getting the sequence of doors to open in the right kind of path. You know, stuff that Skyrim made hilariously easy. So when you go back and play a game like this, you're like, oh, these are actually puzzles. Like, you actually have to think rather than just, oh, look, it's the bird on the wall. I must turn this one around to be the bird. But anyways, so yeah, this is basically like a very old school like type of RPG in a new sort of format. And you know, despite the fact that that there's no touchscreen or pro controller, which I would have really preferred, I still think that this is actually an upgrade to the 3DS version, because it's a little better on story. It has voice acting now, which actually isn't half bad. Which, you know, that for a game that's not like a AAA, it's unusual to find, you know, decent voice acting.
True.
You're much more likely to find bad voice acting that's so bad you laugh at it. But the graphics look a lot better in this version. You know, it's nice to play it on a screen because with all those menus and such, the portable mode gets a little busy. Like I said, the only real complaint I have is the lack of other controller support. But for a game at this level of, you know, of however many A's it has, you know, that sort of thing, isn't it's not reasonable to demand such a thing, but if y'all at least patch it for pro controller support, it would make me very happy.
Well, hopefully they're listening, but overall $18 on this one. What do you think of it?
$18. I mean, Skyrim this ain't, so don't go in expecting a cool action game with swords and stuff. It's got that, but this is a game that is much more of a thinker's, you know, kind of an old guy's RPG, if you will. But this one is gonna access your brain a little bit more, and there's gonna be more stuff to remember. But it does seem to be pretty cool, and like I said, I really enjoy the combat once it gets into it, and you know, it's a dungeon crawler. I love dungeon crawlers, so if you're a fan of dungeon crawlers and you don't mind a little bit of cerebralness, if that's a word, cerebrality,
I like cerebro, that.
Yeah, then yeah, go ahead and pick this one up. It's really good. And you know, if you prefer the touchscreen type stuff, the 3DS version's still there and it's still good.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Super Treasure Arena, developed by Venreal, published by Head Up Games, released December 24th on the Switch for $9.99. Super Treasure Arena is a unique mix of retro-inspired arcade action and objective-based arena shooter for up to four players. The result is a frantic game where collecting and stealing coins from your opponents is the key to victory. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, Super Treasure Arena. I think that's it, right?
Yes. I keep wanting to call it Super Treasure Island.
I know, same. I almost called it something else. So yeah, Super Treasure Arena. So this is a game that is definitely built to be a multiplayer game. So it's that you have two modes of play. Either you try to collect the most coins, or you try to basically, it's kind of a king of the hill thing. It's you get the treasure chest and take it back to your fort. So I guess it's more like capture the flag, but you know, it rates you on how often you do that. And yeah, it's up to four players, and each player can choose one of six different kinds of characters. And these are all RPG trope characters. The whole thing is kind of presented in a, looks like an 8-bit RPG, but plays a little bit more like Zelda. So each of your characters, everybody has the same controller set, because this is very much a kind of casual game that you're going to introduce at a party, and you don't want to have to over-explain everything. So all the characters kind of move and deal with things the same, except that each one has a special thing that they can do as an ability. And the ability is, of course, the Y button. And it's like charged up throughout the round so that you can use it multiple times. So for instance, you've got your ninja can, you know, you've got a ninja, and he can make himself like much more powerful for a limited amount of time. His sword strikes do a lot more damage. You got like a mage who can basically roast an entire part of the map in like nine different spots in kind of a circle around him. So that's really great for when the action gets too melee driven. He can run in there and just be like poof and probably take out a few of the characters. You got a mystic that can freeze enemies and players in the vicinity, you know, various other things like that. You also got a knight and a rogue. Oh, the rogue actually also starts off with arrows. So on top of your regular swingy weapon, you can pick up a number of other themed weapons throughout the level, like bow and arrow, and it looks like dynamite, and then it acts like a shotgun. I don't know what that is. And then there's like a fire wand that, you know, shoots fireballs and stuff like that. And, you know, arrows are very, very like fast loading. Like it's basically like a machine gun. And then, you know, your fireballs do more damage, but slightly slower, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you pick one of your, I want to say six levels, and you know, your four characters will appear, and, you know, you have to basically destroy each other. But also, the game throws in some regular-ass monsters. And they're usually called things, you know, really creative things, like a skeleton or a bat. And so, but, you know, defeating a skeleton and a bat nets you more a gold coins. And, of course, in the one mode, you want more gold coins. And in the other, they just serve as obstacles to get to the treasure chest. So on top of dealing with the other characters, you get enemies to deal with. And I suppose the dual purpose of this, and this is something I like about the game, but also kind of hate about myself, that I, you know, I actually didn't realize that you could set the other players to computers, and the game will totally let you play this game by yourself.
Well, that's good.
With no computer characters, just the other monsters in the stage. And then once you collect enough coins and the timer runs down, it just gives you first place every time. There's literally no way to lose. And then the second time I played it, I was like, oh, you can set the computer players. Okay, that's fine.
And, I'm so proud of you.
I know. So you can set however many computer players, and, you know, computer AI is decent, but this is really a game that's meant to be played with three other people, you know, on the couch. And it really, you know, just judging by the one player against the computer mode, it gets really frantic, and the action's really cool. This is basically your quintessential, you know, party game. You know, no fuss, no muss, and everybody dies really quickly.
Nice.
Yeah.
So $10, what do you think?
$10, I say go for it. Just get it up in there for your next party. Because, I mean, everybody can play this kind of game. It uses twin stick shooter controls if you prefer. It actually, you know, your character will shoot wherever they're facing, but you can also just throw the other stick in there and get more precise with it, which I kind of like that you get that option. But yeah, no, I think this is a great game for people who, you know, appreciate old school like aesthetics and, you know, really want to get the smack on.
Good for parties.
Yes, definitely. I can't really recommend it on the strength of the single player alone, but just because it only has the two modes and five levels, and, you know, after you burn through six characters, you're going to be like, well, okay, where are my friends?
Yeah.
But if you have any kind of friends that are willing to play this kind of game with you, this is worth having in your pocket. So go get it.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Xenon Valkyrie Plus, developed by Diabolical Mind, published by Cowcat. This one's releasing January 1st on the Switch for $9.99. Xenon Valkyrie Plus is a roguelike with many RPG elements in which you have to get to the deepest part of a moon and finish the plans of a wicked witch. You'll be able to get many weapons randomly as you fight in a world that is created every time you play. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, so Xenon Valkyrie Profile, what? I lost the title somewhere in there. It's all these titles I'm forgetting. But so this one is a roguelike. It is a side-scrolling shooter. It is one of those where I would describe it as kind of like something like Legacy of the Wizard, or I suppose a more contemporary example would be Cave Story, where your character is much smaller than the playing world. You know, you play a little guy that's like, I'd say guy, actually, I think either two or three of them are girls. But, you know, your person, or alien. it's like an 8-pixel tall thing that you jump around these giant levels with and try to collect all the goodies in order to get to the gate at the end of the level and proceed to the next thing. Yeah, you have your choice of three characters, which one of them is the lady with the pigtails that's like pretty much on the front of the game cover. She has a little bit of a boost, I think an attack. Maybe not, but anyway, the main thing about her is that she always starts with a key. Now, every stage has a white all the ones I ran into have a white treasure chest in it, and in that is your upgraded weapons or guns. Your weapon, you know, your short-range weapon is kind of a sword, and your long-range weapon, you know, it's, of course, endless use, and then you have a gun which shoots in a straight line unless it's a special gun, and it has limited ammo. So you're going to want to collect these things as you go through the stage. And you know, she gets that as kind of a guaranteed initial bonus weapon, which is nice. The other character, on top of, they each have their own special ability, and also, like I said, they're unique stats, but the stats don't really matter eventually, and I'll get to that in a minute. But the other character seems to have much better luck in treasure chests, like getting a lot more money. That's what I've been able to gather from her. And she also starts with the most HP. and she has a special ability that lets her see treasure chests on the map. So I assume this character is kind of a treasure hunter, sort of. It's the one with the short pink hair. I can't remember any names. I think her name's Rena, and the other one's Aelin or something like that. And then there's
close enough, I'm sure.
Yeah, close enough for Jazz. And then there's New. New is my favorite. New is a fishy looking alien. Can't tell if it's a boy or girl. It's one of them. I mean, if it's truly an amphibian, it can be both or either at any point. But New has an ability that allows them to rocket boost jump up into, basically the whole screen, the whole visible screen high. And since these levels are randomly generated, they're like really randomly generated. So sometimes things are put literally out of your reach. You're able to scale walls through wall jumping with all the characters, but New has the rocket boots, which lets them jump like straight up in the air, and that gets you to a lot more areas. On top of which, I think New has, the most of something, some kind of stat. I don't really remember. But the reason why that doesn't really matter is because between every single stage, you have the ability to go to this sort of, I don't know what it is. It's like just a stone type thing, and upgrade your stats based on how many levels you gained and how many ability points, or what would they call them, talent points, that you collect every time you level up. You level up, of course, by defeating enemies, especially the medium to large size enemies, which are worth a ton of experience points if you survive. And you can pour those talent points into just about, into any of the stats and, really customize your character. This is basically the kind of roguelike where if you can get through the first level, then you actually have a pretty clear path to get, very far in the game. But if you're going to die, you're probably going to do it on the first level because nice. Your characters start with such low stats. Yeah. The enemies aren't particularly hard. It's just sometimes they explode and the explosions do damage. They can be unpredictable. Some of them can shoot when you don't think they can. And some of them just kind of, just get in the way out of nowhere. And, so yeah, like your whole goal of the thing is basically to try and collect, defeat all the enemies and collect as much of the treasure as you can so that between the levels you can purchase upgrades, raise your level, and then, better prepare yourself for the next stage. And then there are bosses. The bosses get their own special stage where they take up a pretty good portion of the screen, and they're badasses. They're very hard. And, you're probably going to end up dying at them just to start the entire game over and try to get to them again, because it's very much one life and you're done. The only thing that seems to retain between playthroughs, like, this is pretty much a roguelike because I think you absolutely just completely start over again. I think the game only just keeps track of what weapons you've obtained in various playthroughs so that you can look at them and, check out the stats. And that's just about it. So, but the thing about this game, what I noticed while I was playing it, and I played this one for quite a while, because I got it early and also I just really like it. But I noticed that with the really cool sci-fi aspect of it, which, you honestly don't see a lot of really good looking, like, sci-fi pixel art games in this genre. It's usually more like fantasy based or, something like that, at least in my purview. But with that, with the really good soundtrack, this is an excellent Game Boy style soundtrack. They call it chiptune, so whatever. I guess chiptune's the fancy word for it. but with the fancy chiptune soundtrack and the pixel art is just breathtaking. It's absolutely gorgeous. I really love the backgrounds, the cinematics, the bosses, like all of it looks great. With all of that, I actually kind of wish this was a different kind of game. Like, I wished it was a Metroidvania, to be honest. I feel like that would have been a much better use of what they've got here, especially with the, like, way cool weapons and the upgrades and, things like that. It just kind of felt, disheartening to lose them all every single playthrough, especially given how tough the bosses are.
Yeah.
But as a roguelike, I definitely kept coming back for more. So maybe, just maybe, the next time they do a game, they can try to do a Metroidvania.
Maybe.
Maybe.
We were just talking about how many Metroidvanias there are earlier in the show. So
yeah, but there's more roguelikes. There has to be more roguelikes than Metroidvanias right now.
Probably.
And, you know, not to disparage them, it's just that it's actually kind of a compliment because of how much I enjoyed being in the game and being in the world. It kind of wrecks the immersion to have to start over from the ship, you know, every 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And I do say every 5 minutes because the game counts, has a counter that goes on perpetually, even if you're in the menus. So
got a speedrun.
Yeah, it's basically set up to speedrun, I suppose.
Well, then overall, $10 on it. What do you think of it?
Oh, $10. Easily go and get it. Like, if you like roguelikes, if you like action platformers, I mean, this is a good one. Like I said, you know, if it was a Metroidvania, I'd have easily paid $20 for it. But, you know, at $10, it's a really solid roguelike with excellent, excellent aesthetics, and it's fun. So I say go ahead and grab it.
Awesome. And Diabolical Mind, if you're listening, Metroidvania next up.
Do it.
Do it. Final game to talk about, not just for the episode, but for the year.
Whoa, closing out 2018.
Closing it out with Instant Tennis, developed and published by Break First Games, released December 6th on the Switch for $8.99. Instant Tennis, instant fun, easy to pick up with motion controls. Swing the Joy-Con like a tennis racket. Easy to pick up, fun to play. Chris, sounds pretty straightforward, is it?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. This is basically the spiritual successor to Wii Tennis, which you may remember from the olden days of 2006.
Ye olden days.
That was 12 years ago.
Oh my god, it was 12 years ago.
It was. Anyway, so if you remember, like, Wii Tennis was a laughably simple version of tennis, where basically if you swung the Wii controller in proximity of the ball that is coming at you, then you have a pretty good chance of winning. I actually favored it over Wii Bowling, which was the perennial favorite, but, you know, that might just be me. It's because I have played Super Monkey Ball and I like Monkey Bowling better.
So
call me an elitist, but
I was all about Monkey Target.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Monkey Target's really good. Anyways, so Instant Tennis really kind of picks up on that one. For some reason, it uses a cast of pre-made characters, all of which are human in, you know, various. It's a pretty diverse cast, which I enjoy. And I was like, kind of like thinking, man, this really feels like the kind of game where you should have a customizable character, but whatever. There are some unlockables, so maybe there's some like much different characters underneath the play covers. I don't know what you call it. The you know, you play enough to pull the covers off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. I've had a long flight. But anyways, so you basically have two modes where you can either play just a quick match, one-on-one, two-on-two, I guess up to two-on-two. Anyway.
Yeah, doubles.
Yeah, you can do doubles in this mode. You just play, you know, against character a quick round, and I think two levels are unlocked in this one out of nine. And then there's the tournament edition, which also has, you know, one initial stage available, and then the rest are locked up, and they're all rated 1 through 5 stars. I guess for CPU difficulty, maybe the terrain is also difficult, but... So you've got, and the tournament mode can actually be played up to 8 players, which I'm not exactly sure how they do that, but I mean, the Switch does work with 8 controllers, and this is probably the only other 8-player game I know besides, what's that other one? Besides the one whose title escapes me. Oh, Cluster Thing.
Cluster Thing.
Yeah, Cluster Thing. It's not Clusterfuck, it's like Cluster Puck, I think.
Oh, yeah, Clusterpuck.
Yeah, that's a good 8-player game. So, deceptively, this game says that it works with the motion controls, and it does. It doesn't mention that it works also without it, which is really great, because sometimes these games tend to only favor one style of control. This game can be played with the motion controls, which is very recommended, or with the Joy-Cons, or with a Pro Controller. Basically, the gameplay is similar in any regard. It's a little bit like a golf sim in that your character, you know, has a powered up like serve, where you, I guess, hold the button down and it you know, does that more. And then you can move you can move your sort of target area. Like it highlights a part of the court where your ball's going to go as soon as you hit it.
Yeah.
And you can highlight a part that you want to strike it to, and then, you know, press the button, and then the ball generally goes there. I noticed in controller mode, I went out of bounds a lot more often than not. So that's maybe a little bit more of a learning curve, which is, like I said, the motion controls is way better, because you just whack the thing and it just kind of basically automatically goes where you want it. It's sort of on a timer. So it moves the thing left and right. And so if you hit it at the right time and get it to the opposite side of the court where the computer is, then, you know, they'll either catch it and volley it back towards you, or, you know, then they miss and you win. So the other kind of gauge going on here is that they have a tiredness meter. So if you keep volleying the ball back and forth, eventually they're going to tire out, and then you can like kind of get it a further distance away, and they'll have more trouble running up to it and catching it. Maybe it's only a feature in local multiplayer, but I noticed that when playing against a computer, my character never actually got tired. Also, there's a canned applause sound that plays only when your character scores. If the computer scores, nobody cheers. I started to feel kind of bad for the computer on that one. So, but yeah, like, you know, all this to say, it is as straightforward as it looks. It's instant tennis. It's, like I said, it's a good, it is actually very easy to play. Like, if you're a tennis novice, then this is a great game to pick up on. It's really basically just kind of getting the timing down of, you know, where to aim your ball when you strike it. And, again, this is definitely one I recommend with other people, or with the Joy-Con, motion control rather than the actual buttons. Yeah. But the button option is there, which is great for portable mode if you're on a plane.
I'm just imagining you swinging your arms on the plane and like running around.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And they're asking, yeah, please sit down, sir.
You gotta get the running around part too. And I actually just brought a ball, smashed it into that little snack cart.
Nice.
And it dispersed all the salty pretzels.
Oh man, so $9 on Instant Tennis. What do you think?
I mean, if you're looking for a tennis game and you're not quite up to the commitment of a Mario Tennis, which I imagine is probably overall a better game, but you know, for full price, this is a great option to get. And like I said, it's really good for sudden multiplayer situations where, you know, everybody's coming into, you know, you got 8 people over and everybody wants to play and you happen to have 6 more controllers, which I've actually had that happen.
Oh God. I would imagine the 8 player thing is just like a trade off in tournament mode where like 2 people play, then 2 people play, and it just cuts down that way.
Yeah, it probably does. Again, I didn't test it out myself because I'm a bad reviewer. I mean,
and you didn't have 7 other people to play with.
I didn't have 7 other people to play with, but yes, I imagine it going that way.
Asking people on the plane, hey, do you want to play some tennis with
me? Oh man, I would have too, but oh well. Everybody was sleeping, man. Frankie, and that includes me.
Well, I don't want to keep you any later than I have to. Chris, it's always good having you on chatting. That's it for this year. We're taking 2 weeks off. Yeah. I'm going to MAGFest. I'm taking a break. I'm going to recharge and relax and come back fresh and ready to go in the new year. So, Chris, do you have any final words to end the show for the year?
Happy New Year, everybody, and enjoy your MAGFests.
love you, but long as there are stars above you, you'll never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, though life would still go on, believe me, the world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, though life would still go on, believe me, the world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you. God only knows. God only knows what I'd be without you. God only knows.